Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Need expert advice on your family's health? Speak to us today at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, so we're keeping an eye on that occupation in Trinity, but the pro-Palestinian campus protests in the US in the past 2 weeks have drawn comparisons with the anti-Vietnam protests of the late 60s. But interestingly, you notice that a lot of the veterans of those protests have been expressing concerns about the current situation. Bonnie Greer, author and cultural commentator, good morning.
Good morning, Brendan.
So, Bonnie, you were there in Chicago in 1968 at those infamous protests at the Democratic National Convention. I want you to tell me about that, but do I get the sense first, are you troubled, conflicted about the current protests?
Well, you know, in their theory, I'm with them more than I'm against them. But it's like, you know, for me, Brendan, it's like watching a horror movie, though, where you want to scream at the screen, no, no. I know the ending to this, but there's nothing that you can do about it. It's really traumatic for me to watch because I do know the ending to this, and it's not a good one.
Okay. So take us back to 1968 then first and the build up and then the Democratic Convention in Chicago and the infamous protests and riots there.
Okay, I wasn't in university yet, but I was like in between. And a lot of my friends were at university, particularly at the University of Chicago. I was born and raised in Chicago. And so I was hanging with them and got involved with the anti-war movement. We got involved with being against the Democratic Party and voting third party. And, you know, basically sit-ins at campus, you know, all kind, you know, the whole nine yards, basically.
Okay.
And the Democrats had their convention in Chicago, like they're having this year. It's like it's so horrible I can't even talk about. But anyway, this year. And those of us who were anti-war were really against the Democratic Party's candidate because the link with the President of the United States at the time, Lyndon Johnson. And we were really for a third party candidate called Eugene McCarthy. He wasn't third party, but he was running against the mainstream Democratic Party member. And we were in the streets. We were protesting. We were shutting the campuses down. I remember people going to the dean's office and like turfing him out and, you know, everything. It's like a rerun to me.
And it turned very ugly over those few days in Chicago, didn't it?
Well, I can still remember being on Michigan Avenue, which is a long boulevard like the Champs-Élysées, and the whole of the avenue lined up with the Chicago Police Department. I mean, in those days, there were no Miranda rights where, you know, a policeman is obliged to tell you, you don't have to speak, blah, 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 we can get you a lawyer. None of that happened. It was just, you know, billy clubs and guns. And we took over the Hilton Hotel where the Democrats were, and there was tear gas lobbed. And we took over Grant Park, which is a huge park in Chicago. And we took that over. And we were just screaming and saying we weren't going to vote for the Democrats. And we got Richard Nixon.
Okay. So,
and right now, we got Donald Trump, who is 100 times worse than Richard Nixon.
Okay. So, how did Chicago set in chain the events that led to Nixon? I guess on one way they were extremely it was extremely divisive atmosphere around it, wasn't it? Like I was reading I don't know if you've read Nathan Hill's book The Nix, which is set around it, but it seemed that it entrenched parents and their children on opposite sides of something here in a way that was kind of very deep. Yes.
Well, it's logical because our parents were the old Cold War generation, you know, fight communism everywhere. So they sent my generation to fight communism in Vietnam. I mean, people were drafted, which young people are not subjected to that now because we stopped it. But people were, you know, you could get arrested for not joining the army, and people fled the country. They went to Europe, Canada, the whole thing. So you got, that year, Dr. King was assassinated, and a couple of weeks later, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. So you got that whole trauma on top of that. then our parents, who actually saw us as, you know, yo, you're going to a big expensive university. We're actually paying for it. And you guys aren't going to class. We don't understand this. And what Nixon did was appeal to what he called the silent majority. Those people who are sitting back, paying their bills, trying to put petrol in the car and blah, blah, blah. And they're looking at us, you know, somehow being able to rush around and shut things down and everything. I think what young people don't realize, and we didn't realize it because it's part of being young, you don't realize it. People in America right now are stressed to the breaking point for all kinds of reasons. And they're looking at people, for instance, at Columbia, who are going to an institution that costs Brendan $90,000 a year. So that's where they're going. They've got masks on their face so that they can have jobs, whatever, at the end of all of this. We weren't masked. And, you know, you got a police department now who has to actually read you your rights. You can get a lawyer. We couldn't get any of that. But that's in the old days. That's in the past. The problem is we're faced now with a Hitlerian presidential candidate who will basically say, I can solve all this. I'm the strong man. Most Americans want to, like, just be able to go to work and not have any noise. It's, you know, the pandemic, all of that's been crazy. What he will do is, you know, young people will descend on the Democratic convention and tear that up. Then I've gone Hitler. Trump will then show the retreat from Afghanistan, which was really messy, show the young people, and he got the election. And if he wins, the United States has changed forever and the world. And that's my worry.
Okay. How realistic do you think that history repeats itself?
It's looking pretty likely. You know, they say that there's an axiom attributed to Einstein. I don't know if he said it or not, but the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and thinking you're going to get a different result. You know, people, you know, you can't tell a 22-year-old anything about history. We couldn't be told about it. That's just part of being young.
This is it. Yeah,
I get what they're about. I get it. I'm like mostly with them. I understand. But there's a long game here, and they're going to lose it. We lost, and they're going to lose because it's exactly the same pattern. And those of us who were in the street, those of us who saw people, you know, lose their lives, we were faced, Brendan, and I remember this now, we were faced with cops. A lot of them were a little bit older than us or our age, and they were working class people who had to go to work. And we were out there protesting and going to school. And it's a class thing. It is also about people thinking, you know, how do you have time to do this? And I'm trying to pay my rent. And you just need somebody like Trump to just say, those kids out there, they're wealthy, they're privileged, and you have nothing. And I'm going to sort it.
And Bonnie, I can see that it's not your natural home to be against these kids.
No, not at all.
Yeah, yeah. But
and it isn't. And I'm not against them. You know, they, again, it's part of being young. You don't think it's going to happen this time. You don't, you know, you just don't think it. But my main concern, the other thing, too, is that all the universities are different, Brendan. Some are public, some are private. So a public university has the obligation to call in the police to clear the public spaces. The private universities can define the First Amendment as they wish. And it's all private. They can all do, you know, conversations with students. And the university is supposed to be a place where you can have debate, where you can express yourself, where you can learn about the different streams of thought that are in the world, to make you a better scholar, make you a better person. I've been chancellor of a university. I have degrees from several universities. So university life is extremely important to me. Freedom of speech and freedom of thought and freedom of movement for students. This is the place where you do that. But the other part outside of the gates is the real world. And right now, the real world in the United States hangs by a thread. And we have a constitution that all of us thought was ironclad. It ain't.
Bonnie Greer, thank you so much for that fascinating insight. And it's just after 12 noon now. We're going to pause for the Angelus.